recut version aired on American television in 89 under the title Dinosaur Secret of the Lost Legend as part of the Wonderful World of Disney.
That title makes more sense.
And I bet it was about 30 minutes long.
It was probably better.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing? Because you clicked on the thing.
You sorry, sick, sad son of a...
Hey, Maddie listens to the podcast.
No, she doesn't. She just got to pick.
Okay, I would like to point out, as far as listenership goes, yeah. Sean selects the best ones. Like, we get more listeners out of Sean picks than anyone else. Can you guess who gets the least amount of listen per pick? It's Madeline.
No.
Yes.
13th Warrior wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. It's, you know, it really isn't based on what selection of movie we're doing most of the time. It's usually based on, like, if there's a huge outbreak and everybody is stuck at home and not going on their commute.
Yeah, we used to have quite a few interactions, but then it really dipped because of COVID. And we haven't bounced back yet. So if you've got someone you want to punish, tell them about our podcast. I mean, if you want to engage with somebody in a positive and fun way about movies.
I mean, half the time, I'm pretty sure that people would rather grate their face up against a cheese grater than listen to my voice.
No, I don't think that's true. I think it's difficult. We are, for being probably the broadest topic on any, probably the broadest topic on any kind of podcast. Everyone's got a movie podcast, right? And ours, within that super broad spectrum of people sitting in basements recording their podcast, ours is very niche. Like, people don't find us. and that's not on them. But
I would like to mention that enough people have found us that we reached this month
6,000 downloads.
6,000 downloads.
Sweet.
I mean, that's an arena. Like, not a big arena, but it's a lot.
It's an arena of people who have come back to listen.
Like, if you had to shake all those people's hands, you'd be very tired at the end of that.
Well, provided they're all individual people, or they're just, like, not someone who's coming back.
There's a statistic when I was in elementary school. Somebody said, okay, you know, President Bush? If everyone in China stood in a line and shook his hand for 2 seconds, the population would reproduce at such a rate that he would never finish shaking hands.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, like, how many people in that line are going back into the line to reshake his hand?
I mean, it was just a thought experiment. I think it was like, you only get one shake.
Yeah.
One fair shake.
Okay, never mind. I'm going to stop beating this dead horse.
Let's start beating some dead dinosaurs. Oh.
And that is probably the best segue we've had on the podcast.
So I didn't know this thing existed. I was at Dungeons and Dragons with Madeline, and she was like, oh, when do I pick? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you get to pick next, because both you and Lydia have birthdays in May, and we try to let people have their birthday month, you know, to pick the movie, you know. And she was like, oh, I think I'm going to have you do Baby. And I was like, Baby? And my brain went to the baby from Dinosaurs, the TV show. Not because she said anything, but anytime I hear the word baby, I'm like, I'm a baby, gotta love me, big googly eyes and very cuddly, right? Okay, so I was like, oh, man. And then she's like, it's about a dinosaur. And I was like, they made a movie out of that? Right? And she's like, yeah, it's about a dinosaur. So she pulls up the preview, and I was like, now we're playing, so we're doing something else. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no, your choice, whatever you say. And then I promptly forgot about it. And then we did Lydia's Doom Patrol episodes, which I think were really good. And then over the last 2 days, I've watched this film twice, and it is a film I've watched.
I agree.
Is that how you got here, too?
I have actually probably seen this movie before, but it is back in the Wayback Machine. So I'm pretty sure we watched this on VHS, but I was young, because this came out when I was 4. On VHS, it was probably when I was like 5 or 6. It is definitely pre-Jurassic Park era as far as special effects go. I do remember being sort of into dinosaurs during my young adult years when this movie came out, and we had a couple of different educational, edutainment videos around dinosaurs. But this one in my brain gets mixed up for some reason with like Gorillas in the Mist with Weaver. I think it's because of the whatever case the or poster that I associate with the two of them. I just probably have a lot of shrubbery inside of them. This looks like this movie.
They do mention Jane Goodall once, so it's reference self-referential.
Yeah. Okay. Lydia, I think you had mentioned that you've seen the cut version of this, right? For TV?
No. So we were watching this yesterday, and there's some, you know, nudity and some choice language. And we kept making the, we kept asking, this is a movie that is for children. And so it kind of was like, well, maybe Madeline's seen this on the network. Maybe this has been cut. Cause like,
in the theater, she said.
She said it was in the theater, though. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, opening scene is going to have a few interesting moments in it that make it surprising that this is a kid's movie.
It was too much for my patented booby count. My nudity counts, mm-hmm. which are unfortunately more frequent than I would suppose for our podcast. But I was like, I was like, oh, no. You get your first boob 4 seconds in, so I'm like, maybe I just don't for this. Because especially because it's Native people's nudity. It's not, okay, it's not gratuitous. It's not sexual. It's just breasts, you know? And I'm a proponent for non-sexual nudity.
Right. So it just was really kind of surprising when I watched it yesterday for the first time. And then again today.
National Geographic was a bigger thing back then, too. And I think that probably a little even more used to full frontal indigenous nudity than
yeah, it's funny that we see like every other woman's breasts, everybody's breasts except for the white woman.
Yeah, we do see her in a bra.
Oh, but it's unsnapped.
Also, it's an 80s movie, so you have like it's a PG 80s movie, so it may as well be a rated R movie for today.
It's PG.
You see a wing wang.
It's before the days of PG-13, I think. I'm going to have to go back and see when Temple of Doom came out, because that was the first PG-13 movie, I think.
Fact checking.
Oh, Temple of Doom is 1984. When did...
And this movie was started back in, like, let's say that this movie was started back in 1983, and so they just grandfathered it in.
Red Dawn was the first PG-13 movie, and it was released on August 10th, 1984, a year before this film was released. So this is a hard PG. This isn't somebody, you know, it just slid under the radar. This is like,
well, all of the nudity is non-sexual,
right? But you do see someone getting spoilers. You do see someone getting killed in the first scene. There's smoking, but that's common for 80s movies, I think. But there's also swearing
and sex.
Well, yeah, definite hints to sex, like something I would not put in a PG movie. Got away with a lot of stuff back in the 80s.
Oh, it's about a cute dinosaur. When did Land Before Time come out? Jurassic Park, Lydia.
So what else do you want me to do?
I don't know. We could discuss the ramifications of those star leafs. Oh, I wanted to eat one so bad.
I was right. Land Before Time was 88.
The star leafs are just maple leaves. We should all move to camp.
That seems like a better and better option every day.
So I think we've all described... now how we came to this movie, which pretty much was
Madeline's fault.
Sorry.
So do we have any Sean facts?
Oh, we have 3 pages of Sean facts.
I do love hearing you talk and interrupting you while you do so.
So I'm going to try to get maybe a third of these out of the way now, and we'll get maybe a third of them out of the way in scene and a third of them out of the way right at the end. That's how I I geeked out to Sean's facts earlier today and decided how to split them up. So the title, the full title of this movie is Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend. Was it much of a secret?
Like, everybody freaking knew.
Well, it comes down to the end. I mean, like, it's kind of an homage to how it all kind of ends with the fact that, I mean, we'll get to it, but the name is, it makes sense in the text of the movie by the very end.
It's the whole movie in one line.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Recut version aired on American television in 1989 under the title Dinosaur Secret of the Lost Legend as part of the Wonderful World of Disney.
That title makes more sense.
And I bet it was about 30 minutes long.
It was probably better.
Oh, Sean found the actual budget. I was looking all over for the budget for this and I couldn't find it. So a budget is $14 million, which is a sizable amount for an 80s movie, but not too huge. Would we like to play the game?
Yes, play the game. Play the game. Play
all right. Best without not going over. What was the box office? It's Touchstone, which is a subsidiary.
Okay. I feel like Disney does get their money back most of the time. $25 million.
Okay. Lydia?
Two tickets were purchased, one for Madeline and one for the parent that was going with her. I really do love you, Madeline. I'm sorry.
So back then, that's about $10, $12.
For both of them?
Yeah.
I was thinking $2, but okay.
Yeah, it could have been like even one of the $2 theaters.
Yeah.
I don't think they're cheapskates. I would volunteer that, like, back in the 80s, it was for two tickets, you're looking at like $12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Lydia is the only one that didn't go over.
I'll just sit here and eat a little crow. That's fine.
Box office was $14.9 million.
That is not a good return.
No. And in fact, when you include advertising and marketing and all that, that means that they lost money on this movie.
Oh, I'm sorry, Touchstone, subsidiary of Disney.
This movie was nominated for one award.
Was it a Razzie?
No. The International Film Music Critics Award, IFMCA, in 2009 for Best New Release or Re-release of an Existing Score, but it did not win. Much of Jerry Goldsmith's heightened scoring for the intense action scenes sound very similar to the scoring he did for Rambo, First Blood, Part 2, released just 2 months later. There was a tie-in picture book released by Disney titled Baby, the Storybook by David Lee Miller. Three performers took turns playing Baby. There was a stunt woman, Paula Crist, gymnast Terry Gervin, and martial arts expert Richard Aguirre. I'm going to say Aguirre, but it's A-G-U-I-R-R-E, so it's probably with an R roll, and I just can't. Aguirre. No, that sounds Scottish. Sorry.
Well, Jen McQuaid.
Each of them brought their own specialties to bring out different elements in their performances. The baby dinosaur's animatronic tail failed to function properly, but this did not prove to be a problem as it moved by itself when the dino walked. So there's
it
a
do wiggle waggle it for do. Sure.
Yeah. So the legend part of this, Secret of the Lost Legend, is from West Congo. And the name of the legend is Mokele Mbembe. 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 Mokele. Mokele?
Mokele Mbembe.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to say that.
Like, when the white guy says it in the film, I'm like, he practiced.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Mokele
yeah.
Mbembe. It's an M-B-E-M-B-E.
In the subtitles, they have an O in there. So it looks like Mbembe. Mokele Mbembe.
That makes sense. It's from West Congo, as I said, but the movie was filmed in Ivory Coast in another part of Africa, and the script, Sean says, rigorously avoids naming the country when the plot takes place.
I kept keeping an eye out for it, and I was like, well, they've got French. I know that there's French-speaking countries in Africa, okay, but like, I mean, lots of places were conquered by lots of European places, and so French influences in a number of places, but like...
They do mention a city that's in Nigeria, and Nigeria is part of West Africa. So, yeah.
Yeah. West Congo is also West Africa?
I mean, I've watched, I love a documentary, and a lot of them have taken place in Africa, but I'm notoriously bad for remembering names. So remembering like specific tribes throughout Africa. Yeah. Like, I mean, I appreciate a lot of the cultures and stuff. The references made in Black Panther are phenomenal. And I watched a breakdown of that a few times, but the, but getting to see them portrayed in this film, I was very surprised because, I mean, they did a pretty good job as far as the things that I've watched that reference African culture, but it's too broad to reference a specific narrowed place. And I was like, well, I don't hate that. If they were trying to be broad but inclusive, they did a pretty good job.
It's definitely not Joe versus the volcano.
Yeah, I kept waiting for it. You know, my finger was on that button. I was like, you just be the most racist piece of shit, and I'm going to click you so hard and be like, right? But I mean, there are things I don't like. That's the whole point of this podcast. But like, that's not really one of them. Not in terms of the character of the people of that area. You know what I mean?
That's all right. I'm almost done here with the first parts of the intro. So the Mokele Mbembe. Mbembe.
It's all right, Jen. We all have to practice.
Legend means that which stops the flow of rivers in the Lingala language. It's a near homonym for their word for rainbow. And the idea of this legend as a brontosaurus, appears in scientific and anthropological reports dating back in the 40s. A 1913 letter by a German explorer is sometimes cited, but is often regarded as a forgery. It's possible that prior to the 40s, the cultural legend was simply a frightening nocturnal spirit akin to the boogeyman. And there are like four or five additional paragraphs about the legend of the Mokele Mbembe. So that I will certainly leave for the end. But I did want to also mention a couple of additional filmmaking things. The filmmakers were required to obtain permission from a local chief to use a lake in one of the scenes. That chief agreed, but only after a witch doctor performed a sacrificial ceremony of approximately 30 animals. So animals died.
Were harmed in the making of this film.
Yes, even though they weren't dinosaurs. But yes, especially if some of them were like birds, I think. Okay, now I'm getting into pseudo. The film's three model dinosaurs made from fiberglass, foam, and rubber measured 75 feet, 60 feet, and 10 feet long and took a year to design, as stated in the production notes in AMPAS library files. Sculpted in the U.S., the dinosaurs were reconstructed in the Ivory Coast and were so lifelike that the villagers were reportedly frightened by the looks of them. And also, a local driver struck two sisters who were walking along the road at dusk, killing one of them. And so there were people that died in this production, too. Machete-wielding natives were poised to retaliate at the crew, but tensions eased after film emissaries expressed their regrets and agreed to pay for the young girl's funeral. That, I mean, that's the least you could do, right? Oh, so sorry. Let me pay for your funeral. Okay, so last two things are about the actors.
That was like the smallest cost to the budget, too. Can you imagine?
That's the 1980s for you, baby. Only pay for the funeral of the people you kill. I mean, that's the most that a capitalist can do.
Oh, man. Hold on, let me just freak out for a little. Okay. Ugh. White people.
White people.
William Catt, who's the lead male for this, also played Carrie's good-natured prom date in Carrie. And good-natured prom date?
Yeah, there was the guy who was like, he was going to ask, he asked her out, and then, but then he was like, he actually got to know her, and he was like, no, I actually do want to go on this date with you. And so, like, carnage rained down on him, too, because she couldn't separate his douchebaggery, his minor douchebaggery from the major douchebaggery of the other teenagers.
Got it. He's also known for the 80s TV show The Greatest American Hero, believe it or not. Do you see what I did there? Never mind.
No, explained.
It's a
better joke if you explain it.
Okay, the theme song for Greatest American Hero is Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on Air.
I never thought I could be so free.
Exactly. And the other lead, the female lead, Sean Young, is also in Blade Runner and a bit of Shocked and a Plot callback In the 2005 documentary Shadows of the Bat, the cinematic saga of the Dark Knight, Warner Brothers executive Mark Canton claimed that Sean Young went into the auditorium room with a bit too much energy. My office door flew open, which says a lot about how different security is these days, Canton said. And Michael Keaton and I saw Sean Young, dressed as Catwoman, leap over my sofa and say, "I am Catwoman.
Hear me meow."
We looked at each other and went, "Whoa."
I don't think that was a good whoa.
She did not get the part, obviously. But that is it for the introduction of Sean Fax.
Maybe she introduced the idea of like a homemade cat suit, though. She was just like, "Look at this. I've sewn together all of my undergarments." It's not like she could go by the outfit.
Well, she could have, because Eartha Kitt's Catwoman.
Eartha Kitt's my Catwoman.
Yeah, but there probably would have been someone who would have known what to put together.
Yeah, they're called a dominatrix.
Okay, I want a dominatrix outfit and cat ears.
Yeah.
Maybe she just was able, even as a human, to cross the uncanny valley into... Maybe she was too believable as a cat.
And they thought, "Oh, we can't hire a cat to play Catwoman. That doesn't make any sense."
Exactly.
And that's a Blade Runner callback.
Instead, she went on to play Salem. Not Salem. Not, she wanted to play Churchill in Stephen King's Pet Sematary. It's enough self-referential. We've done that for the podcast.
Okay, I would totally see a redo. I know they just did a redo of Pet Sematary, but if they did a redo of Pet Sematary with Sean Young in one of the cat's outfits.
Yeah, and she's just like, "Meh, I'm Churchill." And they're like, no, you're really a cat. You need to shut up.
But she's like dressed as like one of the cats from like, no, from the movie Cats.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Angelical cats are named Churchill.
She wouldn't sing. She would just look like him.
She would just be like.
She wouldn't be doing any of that. She would just look like the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she'd be like, "I'm going to kill you." Stop talking, you're a mute cat. Oh, Pitch is like, "Why do you keep talking about cats? I'm right here."
So?
So are we about to start talking about this movie that I have dubbed Land Before Time meets Ferngully?
I mean, Ferngully did have a rapping Robin Williams. So, I mean, what does this movie have? Like the best 15 minutes of the movie at the very end?
They should have that song from Ferngully over that.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Is that the song?
No, it's not.
Okay, because I was like, "Oh, I know it's like shout a little bit louder now, shout," right?
Yeah, they did that. And then we like, na, 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 na,
na, na, na, na, na, na, na, na, na, na, na.
My little brother, Jesse, couldn't say my dead name when we were growing up. So he would call me Nana. And so that song in part that was sung around the house on occasion.
Because my mom just made up songs about me and they stuck. I'm not going to sing any for you right now.
Let's talk about this definitely PG movie and the first scene.
Oh, there is an opening quote. Did anybody write that down?
No.
I did.
We had to rewind it twice. And I read it and I was like, Lydia's probably got it.
Yeah. And this is where the name of the legend, Mokele Mbembe, has the O in it. It's not the M apostrophe B. So. In the equatorial rainforest of West Africa, rumors persist of a huge reptile-like creature. Said to be larger than an adult elephant, the natives call it Mokele Mbembe. Numerous expeditions have been mounted in its pursuit. So far, none have survived. Oh, sorry. So far, none have met success.
Oh, man. Think about all those dead and like
all of these like archaeologists and like dino hunters coming together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they all die.
I have a reformed idea about... okay, and be mad if you have to, but mission people.
Oh yeah,
I've got reformed ideas about archaeologists as well, because oftentimes it's just taking from that country and that country's people, their history, and being like, oh no, it has to be in this London Museum because we are the smarter obtainers of this treasure.
Right. And unless you are getting archaeologists who are like a part of a culture, I don't think that, you know, and they're going, and their plan is to keep the any artifacts they find inside the culture for that culture's own museum, then I'm like, no, if you go there, just take pictures.
Yeah, and lots of times scientists are can be really good about sharing information, and we have this technology, and let's cross this divide together, and we can help each other out. I've got this machine, and you've got that technique, and we can, like, good science does that, right? Bad science makes Indigenous American people have to fight to get their bodies back of their ancestors. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of British people eating Egyptian mummies, eating them, because they thought it was like, they thought it was medicine. Okay, I get trends and everything. It's a real thing. There's a Sawbones about it. It's totally worth listening to. But
okay, but like trends in eating dead people, like there's a lot of things that I would say are trendy.
Yeah.
You know, V-necks, those are trendy. Yeah. Bell bottoms, those are trendy. Yeah. Eating dead bodies cannibalism.
They'd mix it with honey and take it as a tonic or whatever. Yeah.
You know what else you could mix with honey? Absolutely nothing, because honey is delicious on its own. Or butter.
Or lemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's lots of things you could do that they didn't do, and they thought eating mummies. Okay, what I'm trying to say is you shouldn't be able to eat somebody else's history.
We live in a world
where someone ate someone's culture.
But we live in a world where we have to tell people, don't eat someone else's history.
It's bad. It's just bad science. And I'm not about bad science. I'm about evidence-based, thoughtful, non-appropriative science. And that's rant number one. So sorry.
We're never going to get through this, are we? We're going to be here for years.
No, we're terrible at describing action scenes. And there's like a good 15 minutes of that. So we'll be like, boom, 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 baby. Angelical cat snapping our way out of that. Jellicle cat snapping our way out of it.
But that's just the opening. That's just the opening text. So moving on, we have the very first scene is a parade that's showing these various different native dances from, African people in this unnamed African country.
Yeah. And there's no like, this is our St. Patrick's Day parade. There's like no banner that I could see. But I did notice it is a collection of various tribes. So it's not dedicated to one specific tribe. And we see people dancing as animals. We see people doing like just indigenous dancing. Like they're just native dances. And I've seen them, not in a parade format, but lots of times like within their little tribal subcultures, like you'll see them dancing. There's a number of festivals in Africa that bring together tons of tribes. So I've seen montages kind of similar to this on honest to goodness documentaries, and I like the faster dances just as a visual. They do like a big gradient of them, and you get a sampling of the music too. But my favorite guy, and I you might have noticed him, he's dressed as a bird of paradise, and he just flaps so hard, and he's just all over, and he has you know that bird of paradise that has a big black umbrella of feathers, and he's got like two piercing like blue eye spots.
Yeah.
And he like voomf and voomfs. All right, imagine like that three times faster, and he's just flapping all the way. Is the best. And I realized that the animal dances, I don't know if they're totem or spirits or whatever. I'm definitely ignorant, but there was a baboon there, the bird of paradise, and I believe a warthog. Not in that order. It was bird of paradise, warthog, baboon. But they were all impeccable. And the fact that they didn't list tribes at the credits, the fact that they didn't like, I mean, they do a big thank you card at the end. They do say, we would like to thank the people of the Ivory Coast, not any specific country, for participating, blah, blah, blah. But they don't, I think nowadays they might have actually put something like that in there.
Right.
You know, like, we would like to thank the, you know, I only know food words in other languages, like, but like they don't list, you know, Zimbabwe tribe, blah, 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 blah. You know, they don't like, which would have kind of been nice, you know, because then I could go and find video of that specific Birds of Paradise man and have it on repeat.
Up in Seattle, there's a place called the Pacific Science Center, and next to it is like this place where you can get food, and it's like a little food court, and sometimes they have like cultural, like people who are performing their cultures.
Yeah, the name escapes.
Escapes, yeah,
it
I know.
It escapes me, but like I... Yeah, they do lots of cultural things there.
Right. In this scene, they're like, you know, it's a parade through a city. And it gives me a lot of those feels of like going up to see an IMAX movie and then going to get like, you know, lunch or dinner afterwards.
Yeah,
in that
and they've
food
got
court.
Like a train expo or right. they've got like the Thai festival or something like that going on inside.
Yeah, or they have people just from different cultures who are kind of expressing their cultures with like song and dance.
Yeah, and they've got like good, they've got a good straight stage area so that you can elevate and stuff, but also sometimes they'll make a space on the floor.
Right. That's kind of what it gave me as far as feels go. But I know that sometimes when you have these sort of like parades or festivals in movies like this, it is also kind of used to like there's always something negative that happens. And it's like used as like this, the sound is used as like a distraction from everybody in the immediate vicinity to not see the fact that someone is getting potentially murdered or attacked.
Oh, yes. A busy place is a wonderful place to conduct espionage.
Right. And that's actually what we see. We see a couple of guys. They also like both like one of them crosses in front of this guy who's throwing up his kid. And that guy was my favorite because they have to have a great relationship because there's a guy in the parade who's throwing up a kid and the kid's just staying still.
Yeah, just rigid as a board.
Right. And so I was like, that's a good relationship. That's a relationship of trust.
Yeah. And there's a troop of kids behind him and I'm like, any one of them's going to go up next.
Yeah.
Just like, start planking, kid. I'm about to toss you in the air. Pretty good.
Right. And so two guys go across the parade, which I was like, rude.
Right in the middle of the parade.
Right. But it's like one guy is crossing and then the other guy is crossing him, like he's following him. And then we see the first guy get like shanked with a, well, that's about it.
He does indeed get shanked. And he falls, the guy who's shanked, he gets his briefcase stolen, but he falls into cardboard boxes, which was tastefully cliche, but it's not a big thump. It's just kind of, they were there to break his fall. And I was like, practical. And true to life, I think if you get stabbed in an alleyway and you fall into some boxes, you just kind of crush them a little bit.
Yeah. Also, like, what I found frustrating is after the guy gets, like, shanked, they cut to an image of the kid getting tossed. And it's just the kid's face. And I'm like, don't bring this kid into
it. And there's no context. If it's supposed to bridge, like, if the kid is supposed to be dead and it's a spiritual thing, no. I don't have any context for that.
Right.
All I see is you splicing dead white guy and adorable dancing kid.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, and there could have been more context in the film, considering that it feels like that this opening scene takes up about like 5 minutes. It feels that way. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's about that. It's not very long, but right. it does establish.
They could have very easily had banners, you know, kind of talking about like, you know, different parades, like you know, the like, oh, this is a parade signifying death, and then when they cut to the kid. You know?
Yeah. Are you saying that you would have appreciated a bit of exposition on this?
It's either that or don't just cut randomly to the kid for, you know, a jump scare. Because it's like guy gets stabbed and then kid and then
who
guy.
Who has red face paint on.
He does?
Yeah.
Okay.
The kid does.
Because I kind of got the feeling like that kid was seeing the murder.
No. The kid was facing towards us, the camera.
Right.
And they walked past him. And so we see the face of the kid as they walk into the alley. So
right.
The kid's faced away. I would like to think the kid would have said something. Hey, yo, that white guy just stabbed that other white guy.
That would have been hilarious.
It would have been end of movie. But yet we go on.
And so one of the guy who did the stabbing. He's like this older guy. He's got this like gray beard and a white hat. And he's looking through, you know, some like paperwork. What's my notes say here?
I only refer to him as evil scientist from here on out.
Right. I was like, secret notes.
Yeah. But it's photos.
Yeah. Oh, it's photos. Yeah.
Nessie-like photos. They are not good quality photos.
No, not at all.
So they could very easily just be like a floating log with a mat, like a Halloween mask on him.
Yeah,
I think that's a Futurama joke where they were like, oh, we found Nessie. And it's just this floating log with a Halloween mask on it.
I've always thought the most famous Nessie photo just looks like somebody doing this out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you can't see what I'm doing, applauders, but I am pinching my fingers like I'm holding, like if my hand was in a Kermit the Frog Muppet and just kind of ducking it around like a swan.
Well, like, what is it? Bigfoot reminds me of just someone hunched over in a ghillie suit. Have you ever seen a ghillie suit?
Yeah, for sure.
It just looks like someone in like a brown ghillie suit.
Okay, you want to know my favorite Bigfoot? Since we're talking about cryptids, right? you want to know my favorite hypothesis on Bigfoot?
Yeah.
That it's actually early era furries going out into the woods. And so nobody could be like, no, that's my kink. Nobody wanted to admit it. And all I can think of is like, because it's in the sunshine, the photos and stuff, I'm like, God, that must have smelled bad. But maybe that's a part of it. I don't know your deal. I respect it at a distance. And I think that's all we really need to do to each other. For each other.
I love that. I love the idea that it's, you know, early furry kink.
Right? He turns around and he's like, "Ro-ro." Better lope into the woods, make it sellable. And that's why they never brought it out till after the guy was dead. They're like, "No, don't talk about Uncle Mike." Okay. Oh, let's go to a wholesome baseball scene.
Wholesome baseball scene. That's in this what is it? There's like a dig that they're at. There's this guy, one white guy, who's trying to teach all these African guys how to
choke up on the bat, you know, take a swing. Guy hits the ball, "You're going the wrong way, blah blah." I'm like, ugh.
Why don't you just let them play soccer?
I mean,
they probably know how to play soccer.
Well, they might enjoy learning about baseball, but to insinuate, if you're like, now run the bases in this direction, and they would naturally get it wrong, that's funny. I don't know. Maybe he just said you have to run around the bases if you hit the ball. That could be confusing, you know? Maybe he's giving bad instructions and that's why they're kind of sucking at it. That's what I'd like to believe, because he's a douchebag the rest of the time. I've got opinions. Okay, so he gets called into a phone call, right? In the office.
And he, the dialogue with his boss, which is after this moment, his boss is like, "I'm sick and tired of all these articles about African sports." Or
he... douchebag says they're natural athletes, and I'm like,
oh yeah, this is our main character. Yeah. This is George.
I like the name George too much to like dirty it with this douchebag,
so we'll just call him Jerry.
He's more of a Jerry. not Futurama. God bless it. It's a much more Rick and Morty reference. Yeah, he's much more of a Jerry. Okay. He chews gum through the entire scene. Like, on the phone. I mean, if you're chewing gum and you get on the phone, don't you just kind of stick it in the corner of your mouth or spit it out? You're not like, yeah, so I talked to
him. And now all of our listeners have to hear that.
Okay, sorry. Let me do some ASMR ones. Yeah, natural athletes. That's not racist.
Is he believable as a sports journalist?
I mean, we don't see him do any journalistic.
Exactly.
I think he gives a bad name to sports journalists.
I'm mad that this entire time... Oh, I'll get to it later. It doesn't matter. It's in my notes later. I don't want to say it like 80 times.
But Jerry slash... I'm just going to call him Jerry. has a job contract. And he's like, yeah, we can get back home in like a week. And he's like, what about Monday? And I was like, well, you fry up the hamburgers, I'll be there before Christmas.
Okay. He's getting a job at, I think, the Washington Post. And hey, great. Because, you know, they should abandon his wife's dreams at this point. I think it's early enough in the film that we do that.
Also, it's early enough in their relationship that, you know, he's given her enough pats on the head with her career.
Could you imagine? Like, I mean, I think that Jen and I have been largely supportive of each other over the years, but the idea of you making that kind of decision, like, explicitly without us talking first. I mean, I feel like they've had a conversation about it, but he goes, yes, awesome, and starts high-fiving himself without being like, I'm going to call you back in like 20 minutes. I got to go briefly throw down with my wife, because a lot of this would be solved if they'd taken that 20 minutes.
No conflict in a movie? That's a boring movie.
Yeah, okay, but can't you have conflict without douchebaggery?
It was a joke.
I mean,
because... like, outside of the last 15 minutes of this movie, it's a little bit dull. Oh, I don't mean to shit on this movie. I really don't.
No, we're going to do it anyway. So, in walks in, whom I have dubbed, because, again, never any real names in my notes. I call this gay-coded kisser.
Oh, is this, but don't we meet his wife Susan first?
Nope.
No?
No, she walks in later.
Okay.
Yeah, because it goes gay-coded kisser, and then she walks in and he walks out, And then she talks to dude about the bone, and then she walks out, and then they're at dinner.
Okay, because I thought that it was that she walks in. We then meet Susan.
Oh, it, she might, talks it might the guy, be she and then him and then.
Yeah, because like when they're driving off is when Nigel, which is gay-coded kisser, is talking to Professor Eric.
Yeah, but he comes in during the scene. So like she must come in with the bone, and then he comes in and kind of like they himp and haw at each other. And then chick scientist walks off with douchebag McJerry, and then talks to him.
So basically what we're trying to get to is Susan comes in with this bone and she's like, oh, I think this is like I think this is a dinosaur bone. And the doctor, her professor's looking at it and he's like, I don't know. It's like only 80 years old.
And then she pulls out a book and he's like, no need to reference that, dear. I wrote it. And I'm like, you evil scientist.
Yeah. And, you know, she's kind of feeling down about herself. And that's when Jerry walks in and he's like, yeah, he's like trying to talk to her about something. But then the professor's like, oh, she just got some bad news that her find wasn't actually that spectacular. And then they drive off together. And that's when I remember that when she leaves, she says, au revoir, Nigel, like specifically with a French accent, though he's very British.
I thought it was funny. Yeah. But they end up at dinner together and they're discussing stuff, right?
When you see them drive off, that's when Nigel and Professor Eric have their conversation. And the interesting thing about Professor Eric is that he was the man in the alleyway.
Womp, womp, womp.
With the secret notes / photos.
Stabby, stab, stab.
Yeah. And so Nigel and Eric are talking about like, oh, you know, has she figured it out? And he's like, oh, no, she's very good, but she's not that. But she hasn't figured out what we're planning. And I think they're expecting them to be gone like in a few days anyways.
Yeah.
And so, but it sounds like they're.
He told her it's a giraffe bone.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of, you know, really disheartened.
Yeah.
Because she's been gaslit to believe that she doesn't have any credibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though she's like played up. It's like, oh, yes, you're so great. You're one of the best postdoctorate students I've ever had out here. But still, she knows more and she's not being given that.
So when they cut to them having dinner, he orders a food or something that he's like, well, I'll never have to use that word again. Right. And I'm like, And then she turns and says one of my top favorite lines in the entire film. And I wrote down a lot of quotes in this film. She turns to him and she goes, I have a funny feeling about this bone. Kind of want that on a T-shirt.
She has a funny bone feeling.
the other thing that I want to point out in this dinner scene is Jerry is trying to convince his wife that she needs to have a baby.
Yeah. She's like, how many kids do you want? He goes, oh, I don't know, like three or four. And she's like, three or four. He's like, I'm one of six. And it keeps coming up. I said it before. I will say it again. The penultimate declaration of your womanhood is not reproduction.
Right. So the thing about the 80s is that culturally, women were at this place of having a lot of autonomy with a career, but they were also still expected to, you know, be a good wife, be a good mother, be able to juggle all of these things. And
the whole having it all thing.
Yeah.
That's so gross.
And honestly, I am a proponent of if you want to have a career, you should go ahead and have a career. If you want to be someone who has a baby, go ahead and have a baby. But like the thing is like. Like financially, you can't really support having a child without having a career. And like, I'm a big proponent of married couples being able to have like subsidies from the government to kind of ensure that they don't have to worry about working full time so they can still be there to take care of themselves, take care of their spouse, and also take care of their children.
Oh, yeah. Almost like there should be a structural
social safety nets that allow people to go ahead and raise children well.
There should be inarguable infrastructures in place to support everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Fraternity leave.
Or just, you know, even being able to, if you brought minimum wage up to where one 40-hour a week job was enough for a family of four to live off of, then you would see like better parenting. You would see parents being able to have like, they wouldn't have to necessarily have a career, but they could go ahead and have like a part-time job, take care of their kids, take care of themselves, and take care of their spouse.
If people put it into perspective, like we have a baby infant formula shortage right now, and it's because we have tariffs on importing formula, and we've shut down a couple plants that do mass produce. And if we lifted those tariffs with families in mind, or we maybe had the government take over those closed down factories and restart up production with the standards for health and safety that need to be in place, because children have died because those standards were not high enough in place. Maybe also if we thought of it more of as a thing that you should get automatically, like access to food.
Are you saying that if we started taking care of people, we would have a better society?
I mean, the numbers say that the first few years of your life, the better you're taken care of, the better your whole life turns out to be. So, and let me quote The Simpsons now, but won't somebody think about the children? And now back to the movie called Baby, which does a terrible job of that.
The next scene that they have is like the movie trying to pass the Bechdel-Myers test, but failing.
Do they talk about a boy?
No, they don't. But it's like right after their conversation, there's a scene with like this entire like car of men that just kind of drive
in. Does that
in.
Ruin it?
Yeah. It has to be like a scene with no other men in it.
Oh.
Yeah. But technically the woman is named, I think her name is Bucky.
It was in the credits. I didn't write it down. I didn't write anybody's name down. I saw her named in the credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, so she hides the bone that she found as the car drives up. And he's like, we were going away for a couple days. And Snivelly McKiss is just like, have a good time with the job and all that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The professor says, you know, if you're working in Washington, D.C., I can go ahead and put in a few calls for you.
You name any school or a museum that you want to work at, and I'll get in a good word for you. And mm-hmm. I'm like,
he does this a couple of times in the movie.
Yeah, he talks about how he has this power.
Yeah, he has no clout of his own. He has to call on friends.
Yeah, he
wrote a book.
Yeah, how many of us actually read?
Don't call me out like that. I'm not your pizza man. Okay, so she ends up, because now she takes the bone in because she's called over to see.
Yeah. So before he leaves, he's like, oh, Dr. Dubois is over here and he wants you to, if you could just go ahead and see what he wants. He's with the Red Cross. That'd be great. And so she's like, yeah, before I leave, I'll go ahead and go over there. And so she goes over to Dr.
She's like,
Dubois.
I'm not a doctor. I'm an archaeologist.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, well, have you ever heard of, and I wrote this down because I had the captions on. It's the Sanofu. They're the Sanofu tribe. That's the tribe that they credit in the movie. I don't know if that... I didn't do any research because that's not my job. God, I'm such an asshole.
It's okay. It's all right.
But essentially, they are a remote tribe, and their diet has not changed in 1,000 years. But suddenly, everybody is coming down with this... You know, they're getting poisoned from food.
Streptococcus.
Oh, you wrote that. Good.
No, I just know what it is because I've had it. It's okay. Food poisoning.
Okay. So they have food poisoning and he pulls out this bone and she's like, oh, this bone looks very familiar. Why does this bone look so familiar?
Yeah, so she goes into her box and pulls out her bone and does what I call the bone comparison. And she just, and they look exactly like, except one is like 80 years old and one is like freshly picked clean, like a carrion bone. And she's all like, yes, these identical bones are identical. And she's like, oh, he asked her first what it was. And she's like, it's a giraffe. And he's like, no. And she's like, what? Gaslit again? And that's when she does the bone comparison. She looks like she looks like the emoji that's scratching its chin and being like, The way they make her look like a dip and keep talking about how smart she is makes me want to shaky cam the whole movie.
Congratulations, applauder. You've suffered through the jungle of our conversations to reach the end of part one of our review of 1985's Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend. Looking to unearth other answers from beyond scientific proof? Never a Straight Answer, or NASA for short, recently released an episode discussing alien wreckage in the United Kingdom. And Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour recently did a live show exploring transhumanism and the Yellow Sand Society. You can check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and a proud trans woman in STEM, Jen. Did you know I'm also a software developer for Podchaser.com? One of my favorite features is the ability to create lists of your favorite podcasts or episodes. It's a great way to share your interests, and it's something I've used when doing Follow Fridays on Twitter. You can visit podchaser.com and sign up to learn more. We've got plenty of plot left to discover, and we'll be back in 1 week for part two of this 80s campy adventure drama. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.